Hello, I'm Carrie Gard, and welcome to Tea Time with Tech Marketing Leaders. Welcome back to the show. We are winding my backlog of pre-recorded audio files down. Oh man, I had so many wonderful conversations over like the last 6 months or so, and I'm a little sad to see them wrapping up here. But I'm like also excited about what's on the horizon for Tea Time, which is we're taking the show live across LinkedIn and YouTube. We are coming to you live. I've done about a few episodes now, and it's very creating a whole new different kind of backlog. Except it's those videos are readily available the minute I record them. And so it's such a shift to go live. It's a different kind of prep. I didn't really prep for my audio files. I had sort of my questions, my format I wanted to follow, and I sort of just got in it and let it be really squishy and see how it felt. And then my lovely producer would create some magical things from my blunders. I can't blunder anymore. Well, I mean, I can be real and authentic, but I have to be much more prepared for these live shows. I have to really walk in knowing the direction I want to go, the specific questions I want to ask, need to keep some space for audience to chime in and ask their questions. And I need to have my intros and outros ready to go and buttoned up before I even start recording, which is just a whole new ball game for me. And I'm excited. I'm here for it. And you can definitely check out a few of the episodes that we've already recorded. So head on over to my LinkedIn profile, check them out. Let me know what you think. If you have any questions, let us know. I'll get them answered asynchronously. Happy to oblige. It's the beauty of making this more conversational in a more community-based aspect. In a new live world, we're going live. We're going live. So this is oh, I think I only have like two or three episodes left that are pre-recorded here. Yes, this one and one more to follow, and then all my live episodes kick in. So I'm grateful you're here. Thank you for being on this 4 year wild ride of over 140 episodes with me, and we're going to keep on keeping on, and we're going to go live, and we're going to be across LinkedIn and YouTube now. We are still going to cut these into audio, so have no fear if you like this format and you want to hang out in Spotify and Apple Pocket, wherever you listen to shows, these will still be coming at you every week. We'll be taking the live files and rebranding them to just audio for you. They're just going to sound a little different, probably because they're going to start with me going, "We're live." Oh, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. The next two shows I have for you are like the best possible ways to round out this journey I've been on. Zach Wenth joins me on this episode. Zach came to me through my network. Reached out and said, "I'd love to be on the show." And I said, "Tell me more. What are we going to talk about?" And it's a topic I haven't covered in depth. And it was really nice to have an expert join me to really unpack this. And given the turn of events of where search is going, I think this topic is going to play more of a role as things move more into an AI world where when we ask a question, we don't go to a website to get the answer. The answer comes to us through the platform that we ask the question on, whether that's ChatGPT, whether that's Google's new platform that's coming out, whatever the case may be, it's not going to be this place where we go off and dig into certain websites. It's all going to be coming to us through the questions we ask. So evangelism and personal branding are going to start taking a forefront in being part of our strategies moving forward. At least they need to be. So if you're not thinking about it, this is going to be a great episode to really start getting you thinking about what this might look like or something like it for your brand for you as marketers who are starting to pick up the phone to talk to our customers. This idea of evangelism plays an important role in that, and what it means not just for the brands we promote and we're part of, but also for our own personal brands and what that means for our own careers. It's a wonderful conversation. I'm so grateful for Zach. A little bit about Zach. Zach Wendt is a senior technical product marketing manager at Treasure Data, a CDP for enterprises. He is very passionate when it comes to AI and storytelling and evangelism. And that's really what we talk about today, is this idea of getting out there and talking about what we're doing. I have to say, I've joined a couple shows lately, and it's really hard being on the other end. I've had a blast being a host for these last 4+ years. I'm going to keep on keeping on doing that, and I'm going to branch out to the other side. And it's tough, but man, is it invigorating and so exciting, and to be put in the hot seat and to have these questions that really make you have to stop and think about your answer and your response, and making sure it's on brand for who you represent and on brand for yourself. It's a wonderful new world, and I'm excited for y'all to jump in with me. So here is my conversation with Zach Wendt.
Hello, Zach. Thank you for joining me on Tea Time with Tech Marketing Leaders.
Thanks, Carrie, for having me. I'm really excited to finally get to have this conversation.
Yes, it's been coming. It's very exciting. Before we dive into the heart of our topic today, tell us your story. What do you do, and how did you get?
Yeah, so I have one of those careers where if you look at my LinkedIn or you looked at my resume, you're like, what was the thought process behind this? Because I started my career, actually, I went to college for theater and realized I wasn't actually going to make any money at that. And it was more of like, it was a passion, but you know, what's the real world look like? And I fell into marketing, you know, and I kind of, it became my performance medium, right? It was kind of like, I got to tell the stories and I didn't realize it at the time. You know, we'll talk storytelling as we go through this, but really that was kind of the thread that started to connect my career. And so I was in marketing and, you know, I did that. And then I moved into the consulting world where I was enough of a nerd that I could help do large scale implementations, but talk from a marketing perspective. So I was that marketing technologist before Scott Brinker made that cool. Or, you know, even gave it a name. It was just, I knew what an API meant. And so that's what I did, is I would gather requirements. I would do planning. I would do strategy with marketing teams. And then I could translate that so that our brilliant technical people could actually implement. And I spent many years on the partner and delivery side before finally just saying, you know, I love delivery, but I need a break. It wears on you after a while. And so I switched over to the product world. And ended up at a CDP. I've been in MarTech my entire career. Seemed like the logical, next step. And it was a kind of burgeoning area. And I'm now at my kind of third one. So this is where I've been for the last, you know, 5 years in the CDP space, which makes me ancient when it comes to MarTech technology. And here I am.
For those listeners earlier in their careers learning all of our acronyms, which we have many, sorry, not sorry, could you just explain what CDP means for those who might not know?
Absolutely. So CDP stands for Customer Data Platform, which is really an enterprise solution that's meant to bring all of the customer data together, create that single unified profile, and make it available to marketing teams, sales teams, whoever. So that you're really working with true customer across all channels, departments, divisions, teams, brands, so that you're really working with the customer, not the fragment of the customer that happens to live in the email system versus the fragment that lives in the customer support channel.
Very helpful. And while I have lots of questions around that, I'm going to keep focused. If you have any questions in regards to CDP or wanting to know more about what Zach and his company does, you can certainly reach out. I'm going to keep us on target. and not go on a tangent, which I'm really good at. Second question for you, Zach, is around the challenge. Is there any challenges you're currently facing right now? What's really hard? What's making your job feel like an uphill battle or a little more challenging than you wish it was?
Yeah, you know, I think everybody right now is kind of feeling this uncertainty still around, you know, the economy and the economics of tech and, you know, the challenges of kind of switching from this growth kind of mindset and this growth mode to efficiency. And you know, thankfully at Treasure Data, I think we were fairly ahead of that and had a lot of that built into our DNA. But it's still one of those challenges when, you know, we're out having conversations of like, where do we spend our time? Where do we spend our energy? And ultimately tying that back to some sort of attribution, especially with what I do, you know, a lot of what I'm focused on in product marketing and evangelism is not directly attributable to one single thing, right? So there isn't a link click that's going to happen from this podcast that's going to tie to a demo request, you know, cleanly. Sometimes, but generally not. And so it's building enough of a groundswell and enough of a force that you can show success and results and, you know, and growth through, you know, through proxy metrics. And that's always an area where I'm just trying to get better, looking at new ways to measure, looking at new ways to, you know, report back so we can say, you know, hey, this is working. And we found a lot of ways, but there's always better ways probably.
So for our listeners who are feeling the crunch, whether that's through layoffs, whether that's through their budgets staying flat or even in the worst decreasing, but then still being expected to deliver the same, if not better, goals, what have you found in your experience lately of what's worked? Everybody's different, and what's worked for you may not work for the person next door, but just to give us some ideas and some fresh perspective, what are you finding right now to really find that efficiency and work for you?
One thing I think that's been a hidden benefit of kind of this slowdown or this kind of, you know, correction, if you will, there's less tire kickers and there's less kind of people who are just doing research to kind of learn, especially around buying tech. So the opportunities that are coming in have seemed to be generally better qualified, more serious, because everybody's kind of dealing with less. So they're not saying, you know, hey, this is a problem and we may, if we do it right, have budget for it. They know that there's either budget or there's not budget. So I think the opportunity is, you know, while you may have less volume, some of that volume may be of higher quality, and therefore you can go a little deeper and put a little more effort and, you know, and kind of wrap around, whether that's account-based marketing, and kind of, you know, bring the whole team to target those target accounts, or even just spend more time with each prospect from, you know, problem identification all the way through close. So, you know, being out at events, we do a lot of events and trade shows, and we're starting to see and have, you know, great conversations, and those are, you know, coming into, but it seems to be the people at events aren't wandering aimlessly. Like, you know, a lot of times, many times in tech events in the past, you'd kind of go and you're like, hey, I'm just looking for some inspiration. Now it seems people, when they're traveling, are on a mission. They have an agenda, they have a focus, they have a goal. And that's great because it allows the vendor side to say, you know, is this conversation that's worth it to you? And they're like, no, I'm just here for swag. You can be like, great. We can kind of self-qualify. Yeah, very early. So it's a great, it's honestly been a benefit in the downside. Now we still have to find enough of those companies to hit our pipeline goals and hit our targets. But yeah, it's been a shining kind of moment in a maybe less than ideal situation.
Just chasing more relationship building, which is a whole different, you know, there's been this shift I agree with you. There's a shift in the universe that's happening, and there is this more need to build those intentional relationships. But that in and of itself requires a whole different muscle that I feel like we're all trying to flex and figure out. It's tough because you want to be authentic and intentional, but you also don't want to end up in the friend zone where, like, we are still in a business trying to cultivate a relationship and build that trust, but also, like, we we need to find either a partnership opportunity or like part ways, and either way is cool, but like we need to figure it out.
Right.
At least in my experience, that's sort of how it's been, this journey of more personalization, more account based, but also like, or maybe it's personnel, like I just really like making friends and I have a ton of that friend zone, but it is this fine line that seems to be figuring that out too, in that intentional world of building those relationships and not finding that balance between those tire kickers, which are no longer showing up, which is great, but also then not putting in so much energy and effort that you end up in this place of not being able to make it to a sales conversation either, because you've been spent so long on just the building
relationships. Yeah.
The building.
And I think that's where salespeople have to, you know, take off their happy ears and put on, you know, their realistic ears and say, you know, this is a networking opportunity or this is a sales opportunity. Cause there's a lot of times where they're not in the market. They're telling you they're not in the market and you're not going to convince or convert them to being in the market. They may be someday. So let's build a relationship. Let's do that. But let's put that aside into a separate bucket so that you can, you know, A, have realistic, you know, outcomes and thoughts. And, you know, I do that a lot at I'll meet somebody or, you know, we'll exchange information. We'll share, you know, we'll share pleasantries on LinkedIn or we'll comment on each other's stuff. And at some point in time, you know, 6 months later, they message you and they're like, hey, switching jobs, da 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 da. Think you might be right. You know, can you give me some information that I can, and I, you know, all of a sudden, you know, somebody who was never, you know, in your prospect list, becomes in your prospect list because you built that relationship. So I think it works both ways. It's just, you have to be realistic up front and say, which bucket is this person in?
I like that. I also think it's a balancing act of in cultivating that relationship and showing up with value on a regular basis and having it be natural and organic versus feeling like you have to put a lot of energy into it, right? Like you should be putting your energy into the prospects who are ready to buy now versus the networking, which is natural and organic. And so right. I think also that comes into play as well. No, I think this is really important. And I really like what you're saying too around the tire kickers and the self-qualification. I think that's happening. I think people are being very clear. Buyers are being very clear whether they are in a buying situation or whether they're not. And I'm still finding people are not listening. Like I even had it happen to me the other day where I got an email from a tool who was like, I think we can really help you. And I was like, here's what I'm looking for. And they're like, yeah, we can do that. I was like, great. Here's where I'm at. I've been with this tool for 5 years. I have to investigate it because they're telling me they can do this too. I need to see that through. And you know, you're on my list now. If this doesn't work out, then I'll come to you. And he pushed and he pushed and he pushed. I was like, now you're not on my list.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the old way of selling. Yeah. Where you're like, I'm going to create an opportunity here, whether they're ready or not, you know, because there's like a glimmer of hope and it just doesn't work. You know, we, especially since there's so much tech now and there's so much solutions that everyone has gone through about, you know, in the past, you may not have been through some sort of enterprise buying cycle before. And therefore you kind of fall into that trap of like, oh, maybe they know something I don't, and I should buy something from them. And everybody's bought something now at this point in time. I think anybody who's on the buying side has been through one or two of, you know, or more. And so they know the game, they know the cycle. And so it's really around, can you actually help me? And when can you actually help me? And I think if both sides have that realistic conversation up front, you know, I went through it. I was just on the buying side. We bought a new solution and it was, we've got your competitor. The competitor's not working out. But we're in contract with them until, you know, 9 months from now. I would be willing to do a proof of concept. I'm not going to pay for it right now. But if you want to get in, you know, here's the earliest we are going to buy, right? Our fiscal year actually happens to start in, you know, in April. And so that's, you know, like this would be the earliest. And so we had this conversation up front and they're like, yeah, no, we'd much rather be on the front end of this. And we know it's going to take longer and we don't have to hurry. We've got 4 months, but let's do that. And when we had that mutual understanding, it became a whole lot different of a buying cycle, because then it really became around, what is our use cases? What are our needs? And not how do I trick you into, you know, buying something by the end of my quarter?
Yes. Your urgency is not my urgency. Yes.
Right.
I love this proof of concept too. Like, wow, I haven't thought of that. And I think when we are locked into these really long contracts, that is a really interesting way to approach trying to figure out if there's something better out there. Because I think that's really tough too. Yeah. On both sides, it's interesting for me as a buyer to think about that. And then I think it's also for those who are in sales, interesting for them to sort of ponder what would that proof of concept be for me to get my foot in the door and start building this relationship in a way that you can actually see this thing in action. That's interesting. I'm digging that. The other thing that I think lends itself nicely to this world, and it's the world you're currently in and where we're going with this conversation around a new way of marketing and building relationships, is exactly what we're doing right now, y'all. We're going to go a little meta on you. Welcome to our version of How I Met Your Mother, where at the early of the good seasons, not season 8, where we're actually going to talk about what Zach's sort of way of marketing recently, which I think is really fascinating. And I think also serves some of these challenges you've been having. So why don't you give us your thinking around going on podcasts, Zach, and this idea of evangelism for your product. This is a different way of marketing that I don't think a lot of us have really thought about.
Yeah. So, you know, as you said, product evangelism, which is, you know, almost 75% of my job now these days, is really around going out and having kind of two messages. One, evangelizing the category. So the category of customer data platforms, the value that they provide just holistically across the board. And then obviously, you know, within that, evangelizing Treasure Data as a, you know, as a vendor, as a leader in the space. The reason we kind of, you know, invest in this area and think about this area and do things like podcasts and webinars and speak at conferences and whatnot is we know it's been proven time and time and time and time again through studies and surveys and just sales research. Consumers are, I use consumers broadly, you know, on the business side or on the consumer side, you know, buyers are 75, 50%. A majority of the way through a sales cycle and a learning cycle before they want to or actually engage a sales team. So they're not coming to a sales team saying, I don't know anything, please educate me. They're coming and saying, we've done our research, we've talked to the analyst, we've talked to our friends, we've been to the conferences, and we have some ideas of what we want to accomplish. And we think you're one of the 3 to 5 solutions that can do it. Prove us right or prove us wrong. And so there's a lot of that education that has to happen. And yes, creating content is one way to do that. So, you know, writing blog posts, putting out white papers, but really there's a part of the funnel that sits way at the top around problem identification, solution opportunity, where being out and just being in front of people and presenting a point of view or presenting a reason why they should consider this, a reason why they should be aware of what a CDP in our case might offer, maybe way ahead of where they're at in either in a maturity cycle, in a buying cycle, whatever. And so again, I'm not trying to sell them today at the conference. I'm trying to get ahead of when in 3 months from now, they're like, okay, this is a problem and we need to address it. Rather than going out and doing a bunch of research with everybody else, they might come to us first, or they might at least prioritize our resources above others. And I have many examples of you know, times that has happened, and happy to dive in, but I'll pause to see if there's any other questions first.
There are so many questions. In terms, so you mentioned a few ways, because I want to be clear that podcasting isn't the only way to do this. You mentioned events and speaking engagements. What other evangelizing, where else do you think that shows up outside of those two examples, or are those the only two examples?
No, so podcasting, yeah, speaking at trade shows and events and you know, other places where your customers show up. Social media, I do a lot on, especially on LinkedIn, and also through, you know, webinars, virtual events, you know, partner led things. We do a lot of work with obviously industry, either industry publishers or analyst groups or different things where, you know, either we sponsor an event and I then go on as a speaker or as a moderator or as a guest, you know, or we're invited on, you know, organically, all kind of various, you know, mechanisms. But again, it's all about helping educate the audience before they are in that buying cycle. Because generally, once they're in that buying cycle, it's a lot of times too late because people have started to formulate that opinion. So, you know, I want that opinion to lead towards us a lot sooner in their mind share than waiting until they hit that demo request button.
So many questions. I'm trying to prioritize. Okay. The two topics I want to touch on next, so I'm going to say them out loud so that I don't forget them, even though I've written them down. Because like I said, I'm really good at going on tangents. The first one is, how do you find the right? I think this is really important, right? Because there's tons of events, especially in the world of cybersecurity, which a lot of my listeners are from. There's tons of events. RSA just happened. Black Hat. The marketing team, the cybersecurity marketers are about to have an event in December. Like, there's tons of these events. How do you figure out which one's right for you and your audience? And then B, how do you even get your foot in the door? I mean, some of these events are huge.
Yeah, so that's always, I think that's always a challenge. There is no perfect answer, unfortunately. I think the way we prioritize is, what opportunity do we have at that event to have an impact? So just attending the event may not be enough, right? So I'll give you an example. We work with a lot, you know, customer data. There's a lot of data in the retail space. So National Retail Federation's event in January, they call it the big show. It's at the Javits Center. It fills up the Javits Center in New York City. It's a huge conference of all, you know, kind of retail professionals. So we know that is an anchor event. We spend a lot of time, money. We have a big booth. We have multiple speaking sessions because just the sheer volume of people are there. But at the same time, we go to, you know, these smaller summits where there's 60 to 100 people there, but they're high quality, you know, senior level people. And you know, getting a 15-minute speaking session where I can talk about, you know, trends in data that they need to look out for. And just give them some nuggets. I end up walking away with, yes, we have a list of people who attended and our sales teams can do the follow-up, but I'll end up with 5 or 10 contacts on LinkedIn that I can then start to talk to. I do things like post other speakers or panels when they do. I post a picture and a comment. And I just noticed the other day on my LinkedIn, I was looking at my analytics. I had an event like this from October of last year that is still getting impressions. On that post, not a lot, but I just noticed it popped up because it was like this one-off post, but it was a bunch of, you know, VP and president level, you know, people on a panel and were sharing good information. And I shared a picture of all of them, tagged them all in it. And it becomes that engine that continuously runs for you. So I think it's all about impact. To answer your question, it's like, how do we prioritize and or how do we pick is where's your audience going to be? And do you have an opportunity to, you know, have an impact, do something that maybe is memorable and kind of gets you in front of that audience. And if the answer is yes to both of those, then I think it's worth testing. And just like everything else in marketing, you've got to test them. You've got to, you know, sometimes you're going to go to ones that are amazing. Other times you're going to go to ones and they get sticky in the back corner of the hall in Mandalay Bay. And you are, you know, you see one person and it happens to be the janitor, like, you know, and I've been to both. I've been, you know, front and center, and I've been in the back corner. And so sometimes you just have to make opportunities when that happens.
I think it's also important to mention, so I live on a tiny little island in the middle of the English Channel, and obviously it's very hard for me to get out. There's conferences that are happening all over the US right now, and I'm watching all these wonderful posts, and I have a little bit of FOMO, and a lot of FOMO. At the end of the day, I can't get to all of these, if any of them, quite honestly. So I love the other things that you brought up around hosting as well. And so do you consider hosting or putting panels together, being part of these panels virtually, also evangelism? But or is it really that in-person engagement that makes it memorable and important.
No, virtual, I mean, you know, obviously during the pandemic, that was our only opportunity, but even, you know, kind of post-pandemic, you know, people, like I said, people I think are starting to travel. Personally, people I think are just bored of being at home, but I think professionally, people are, depending on the industry and depending on the vertical, I mean, I think people are being a little bit more conscientious of when they travel, how they travel, where they travel. And so virtual events are still very, very valuable, especially with, I'm a big fan of doing them with partners. So with other media groups, with other people who have an audience that we can have a mutually beneficial relationship. I can bring content for them. I can bring a point of view. They can bring the audience, and therefore we can generate some leads and some pipeline, because obviously that's the goal. But they need content. They need to, you know, stay relevant to their audience. And so that's a great way where you're not always just chasing your own audience, but you're again going out in front of people who may, again, not be in a buying mode. I'm gonna keep harping on that. Is yeah, we want to generate pipeline. Yes, we want to generate marketing qualified leads and all of those other things. But there's also just, we know that it's a numbers game. There's enough, you have to have enough eyeballs that see you, that are in your sphere of influence where you can't, you know, who would potentially be a, you know, buyer profile. And at some point in time, they will be, right? Because if you think about it, average conversion rate, 3 to 5% on a click through, you know, some of that 95% of the audience who's there is not in market right now. But that doesn't mean that they're not paying attention, that they don't want to learn, that they don't have, are starting to form brand opinions. And so my job is often using stories, using content, using use cases, using all of those things to influence that audience, so that we're kind of top of mind when it comes time to buy.
Let's talk about messaging. I mentioned that I wanted to address that. I think it's important. You sort of have danced around it a bit. I shouldn't say dance like you're avoiding it, but just you've weaved it in. And so let's make it intentional in terms of messaging. One of the things that you mentioned is about, I'm trying to find my note in regards to something specific you said through messaging. You did this talk that was very data specific, right? And trends, yep, being very clear, like, right, that ties, it's very clear. Our product does this thing. I have this data to show this product does this thing, and I can give you valuable information. What are other ways from a messaging standpoint? This is very, like you said, top of funnel. This is very, I want to call it demand gen. Is that fair? Like when you're talking about lead times and like things taking a while and building that initial engagement, yeah, would you consider
this? It's absolutely part of the, you know, I mean, if you slice up demand gen from demand capture, right? Where demand generation is building an audience and building, you know, building awareness of a problem and the fact that there are solutions available to said problem, and the impact to, you know, potentially those problems, whether people knew them or not, as part of the demand generation side. And then moving them forward, demand capture is those people who are now at enough of a point where, yes, this is a problem. I potentially have some budget. I have a timeline, you know, and now I'm going to become a lead, or, you know, within an organization and kind of move forward into a true sales cycle. You know, and there's a lot of argument about like, where does that line draw? It doesn't matter. The point really is there are people at the front who are learning or have a problem, don't have an identified solution. And those are the people that I'm trying to influence, you know, and, or even people who know, like they know CDP and they're just either, they're not there organizationally, maturity wise, budget wise, whatever. At some point in time, you know, it's a rapidly growing space. And so for us, again, they're going to make a purchase at some point. That's the argument I'm making in my head, especially with the right, when you go to those events or you do these trade shows that have the right people. So with that logic, now I am saying, what can I give them that can help them in their career right now? Doesn't have to be buying from me, but what can I help them with right now? So for example, we talk a lot about first party data. One of those challenges is we know cookies are going away. This has been a trend that people talk about constantly, but it's always changing. I spend a lot of time doing research and talking to people and other vendors and customers. So I distill that down. I can say, here's three things you need to consider, you know, or here's what you should be looking for. How is ChatGPT or pick your AI poison, you know, going to impact, right? Having some of those content, you know, having some of that context to things that they're questioning and asking is a huge way of just helping raise this, you know, kind of raise them up and eventually build a relationship. So that's a piece of one pillar of my content is that I just want to help though, say a marketer, right? I want to help a marketer do their job better. It doesn't have to be treasure data related. I'm just trying to help them. I've been around for a long time. I've seen so many different companies. I talk to so many different marketers. I can share information. So that's kind of pillar one of it. And then we get more focused and more specific as we kind of move through that demand curve where then it's now here is there's that problem. Here's a solution and introducing the idea of CDP and use cases and, you know, where that may go. And then finally it's, here's why we're different. Here's why we're better. Here's why you should talk to us above all. But there is, there's opportunity and points of point across that entire curve to have multiple different types of messages in the market.
I just love what you said that I haven't heard it phrased this way. There's two things you said where I haven't heard it phrased this way or haven't heard it phrased as often. And the first thing is helping someone through their career, right? I feel like there's a shift happening towards more account-based marketing, which I think is really helpful from a stop trying to talk to the masses and really talk, like focus on who you really want to be working with, which I think is great. But then drilling down to the people, the individuals
right,
that you're trying to build a relationship with and trying to figure out how to support them before the brand, like that's what I'm hearing you say. Like, yes, it's good to have an account. It's good to know who you want to go after. But at the end of the day, this is hand to hand, people to people. And how are we going to help that person before you help the company? Am I hearing that right?
Absolutely. I firmly believe, and I've been through enough, not even just CDP related, but enough tech buying cycles. If you don't have the people who will be directly impacted by your solution involved in that buying cycle, they may not hold the checkbook. Often they don't. They may not be on the buying committee, but they're the users. If they're not involved in the process will fail because it's going to fail either as a result of it just comes down to then who's cheapest? Because if the executive committee doesn't feel the pain that your problem solves, a lot of times they don't have enough buy-in to worry about anything other than the economics. Secondarily, if you don't have them involved and you manage to sell them and you're not connected to those end users, implementation's going to struggle, retention's going to struggle, you know, keeping that audience. So I truly believe even if they're not, you know, even if the day-to-day person is not directly 100% involved in the buying committee and are, you know, but maybe they sit in on the demos or whatever, they're a huge advocate for you and you have to show them how you relieve those pains, take away those problems. And a lot of that is through storytelling. A lot of that is through customer examples. A lot of that is through sometimes just, you know, hands-on demos. But if you can't show that solution to them, you'll never get the buy-in and deals just tend to kind of fall away when I see that happen.
You opened up a whole new can of worms here, Zach. I think this is really important because what we're talking about now is personas, right? There are several personas, and this is where account-based marketing comes in is really handy, and especially when you're talking about evangelism, right? You have to activate all the audiences you'll come into contact with, and it's a buying committee now. Like, it's not one person ultimately making the decision. It's a group of people, and how do you help them all see the benefit? And they all care about different things, which makes this really fun. So when you're on stage and you're presenting to now all three audiences sitting in front of you, or you're on a podcast knowing that all three audiences are listening to you, how do you tailor your message in a way that can capture each person without talking too broadly and without talking too much in the weeds, because the VPs at the top don't care about the weeds at the bottom, but the people at the weeds at the bottom are like, cool, thought leadership, that's great, but like, how do I do my job? How do Absolutely. You find that balance?
Yeah, so I'm strongly in the camp that most persona projects are a waste of time. I truly believe it comes down to one thing: motivation. What is motivating that individual to have interest in what you're talking about? People don't buy products because they're interested in your feature or they're interested in your UI. They buy products based on what cool thing that makes them, it made them better. How are they better as a result of said product? And that happens personally in our personal lives. That happens in our professional lives. We buy things emotionally and then justify them logically, even when we try to tell ourselves otherwise, that day in and day out, it's an emotional thing. I'm spending my entire day pulling reports and fighting IT, and it's making me miserable, and I'm missing my kid's soccer game. At the end of the day, doesn't matter what your product does. If I can get you home at 4:30 instead of at 7:30, you're going to buy my product, right? If I can show you that, mate, because the motivation was I want to get home sooner to my kids. So finding those motivation points, and like you said, at different points in the cycle or at different points in the buying kind of committee, there's different motivations. The doer is very much motivated about less friction. You know, I'm motivated to make my life easier often in some capacity. And at hire, it's I'm motivated to A, make their lives easier because that I have less turnover. I have less, you know, I have less problems, whatever. And then I know that that translates into revenue. So a lot of times there's very similar motivations of why they're buying, and tapping into that, you know, is going to be key. So to me, first and foremost is personas, demographics, psychographics, all of those things. Those are great for targeting, for, you know, for advertising. They're necessary. But as a marketer, if I can't answer what is the motivation? What are they motivated by to use my product? You know, and what is that primary kind of use case? Like, the rest of the stuff doesn't matter. So that's area one. And then once I have that motivation, once I have that understanding of what they are, I need to show them a path that leads to that motivation. And that's where power of story comes in. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, the trust me, I'm a salesperson line doesn't work, right? So rather, let me show you a world where this is different. Imagine if, and you go into a story, or a customer much like you, and you give a customer story. You know, all marketers should not have to argue, you know, over who their customers are, but one of our customers did, and they were struggling. As a result, they did X, Y, and Z. Therefore, they have this, right? And so you kind of walk them through that, and everybody's like, oh yeah, I have that pain too. I have that problem too. Like, okay. And now you've created relevance, and more importantly, you've created that emotional resonance, because at the end of the day, when people are buying, one of the biggest downfalls, and I know I'm going on a tangent here, but I think this is important. One of the biggest downfalls is not whether or not you gave a good demo, or whether or not you gave you met their needs, or whether you had pricing, but in a competitive space where there's multiple vendors, as most of your listeners are, it's whether or not you're going to be remembered. And when they walk away after seeing five demos, can they remember what you said? Because they'll all start to blend together. Like, our mind is not good at holding on to things, especially things that aren't super interesting to us. They all start to kind of weave into one. And so then what starts to happen is the vendor who gets remembered is the one everybody else starts to create benchmarks against. And that's who you want to be. You want to be the one who's setting the benchmarks, for whatever, whether that's on the selling, on pricing, on all of these things, because step number one is when they walk out of that room, you want them to lock in that memory about how you made them feel, that their excitement, that those emotions that are tied to whatever you're trying to push them for. That's what needs to be anchored. Then you can build from there. But if you can't do that first part, you're going to get the email later that, sorry, we've decided to not select you in the RFP, and good luck.
It's so painful after all that work too. No, I think that's really important. And I love what you're saying about personal work is important. You need to know who you're going after and what defines that audience. But at the end of the day, what ties them together and where your messaging can really flourish is in the collective pain and in the collective, what did you call it? It was the
motivation.
Motivations that tie them together. I don't think we define that way enough. And I love that perspective. I think that's so important. I'm running out of time here. I do have a question around something you mentioned early on, not early on, but when you were talking about sort of the process of how you go out and speak about these things and then the follow-up. And one of the things you mentioned after coming off an event, you've collected a few LinkedIn prospects who are now with you on LinkedIn, and you have to build a relationship with them. It sounds like as part of being an evangelist and evangelizer, person who goes evangelist. Out to wonderful yep. speaking engagements, part of that is that one-to-one relationship building that happens almost like a salesperson would. Is that fair to say? Do you have to sort of step in a little bit to that sales role because you were there and you connected with them and now you're on LinkedIn, this is happening? I mean, or do you immediately try and get them off to a salesperson so that you can keep on doing the evangelist work?
So I approach it in the sense that, yes, I want to build a relationship. I actually have the fortunate opportunity of I'm not tied to selling. Therefore, I can truly be a trusted advisor. My motivation is to help our company, but I also look at that from not just from closed business one up front, but also, you know, net retention down the road and keeping customers long term and expansion and all of these other, you know, all of these other metrics. So we want the right business. You know, our chief product officer talks about the fact that there is such thing as bad revenue. You know, you can get revenue, but it's not the right customer and it's going to churn or whatever, that doesn't actually benefit you. It's cost of sale and all of that stuff. You lose money on that revenue. And so I'm looking at it, you know, I get the opportunity, I get the flexibility of looking at it long term. So I'm building those relationships for the long term. Yeah, absolutely. If they are in the fast lane to making a decision, you know, I'm going to connect them with a salesperson. Or a lot of times, case in point, I had a customer walk up to us at a booth, you know, and was like, "Hey, we just literally sent you an RFP yesterday. You know, and we happen to be here curious." And I'm like, "Okay. I know we're in this weird world of now an RFP has gone out. You probably like have rules around like what you can tell me." I said, "So instead of me asking questions to you, which you probably can't answer because, you know, you're in a corporate environment, ask away. Just you ask your questions that you want to know and let's talk." And so by them just asking their questions, I was able to kind of dial in like, these are the pain points for these guys. Like, this is where they're struggling. Because it was painfully obvious based on just the questions that they were asking. And so I was able to kind of highlight those. Okay, that's high priority. This is interest. And I answered them. We talked, we had some good conversations. I gave them a lot of examples. And then they left the trade show. And when I got back, I got on, I got on the phone with the rep who had got that RFP. And I'm like, "Hey, by the way, X, Y, Z, here's some thoughts. Here's some things you can do. Make sure we're emphasizing in this. Here's a couple of stories I gave them. Here's some examples I gave them. You may want to talk about X, Y." And so I help them kind of frame up that positioning so that as they are going through the RFP cycle, they can use that information that we gathered by being out in the streets. So sometimes it's not as beautiful and clean and fast as that. But generally, yeah, my goal is to learn a little bit more about our customers so we can make our products better, so we can make our messages better, so we can help sell and be more relevant. But at the same time, make it easier on them to understand where we fit, you know, how we compete, what our opportunities are, and what our customers have done.
Last question, Zach, for those who are listening going, "I want to do this. This sounds amazing," or, "Wow, we really need this role. How do I make it happen? This feels like initially a little scary, maybe a bit of overhead. Where does the money come from? Budgets are hard and scary right now. What would be your suggestion to folks? I don't want to say advice because advice monsters are scary, but what would be your suggestions to folks around how to get started with introducing this role and this idea of evangelism?
So if you're not ready to jump in fully to having a role dedicated to it, start to find ways to empower your existing members to go out and start doing things, right? Getting sales to post on LinkedIn with content that's not just about the brand, right? I think too often we just regurgitate, you know, our PR posts and our product launch posts, and those are great. And there's a place for them. 80% of the content I post is related to the persona group that I'm targeting, which is marketing technology people. So I talk about storytelling on LinkedIn. I talk about, you know, analytics. I talk about personas. I talk about motivation. I talk about a lot of different things that aren't necessarily tied to what treasure data does specifically, but it more to who we're trying to reach, because I'm building an audience that then later on, you know, may be in my sphere of influence. Do that on the sales side. Get the salespeople out there talking about wins and opportunities and customer use cases. Same thing with product marketing. Same thing, depending on your org. But find those people who are, you know, you don't have to be. Funny story. I'm an introvert. I do these things. I enjoy them. I enjoy these conversations. And then I go back to my hotel room after I speak on stage. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna hide from people. So you don't have to go find like the crazy extroverted people. Like, just find people who are willing to kind of go out there and put a message out, take a point of view. And it doesn't have to be your founder. It doesn't have to be, you know, executive leadership. There's people in your org who are probably interested and just need a push. That's step one. Step two then is, if you really want to dive in and commit, you know, I think you look for people who have either sold products before, in some capacity, right? I was in, you know, I've been in consulting and I've implemented, I've been in solution lead roles where I've been the subject matter expert. So I understand kind of the process. So being able to take either a solution consultant or taking a product marketer or taking somebody who is intimately involved and can be that subject matter expert and say, hey, 20% of your time, in addition to what you're doing, like 20% of your time, go do these things. You know, we're going to start testing and trialing things. And then eventually you may find it's worth a dedicated resource. I do a lot internally. I do a lot of externally, but I help storytelling internally with our sales teams. I help them with messaging and positioning. So I don't just spend my time, as much as I'd love to be on podcasts all day long. I don't. I work with, you know, hey, just like that example I just gave, right? You know, let's do some stories like this. Let's do a demo like this. You know, maybe we should try and position this, you know, in X way. And so I think there's a lot of value to that role beyond just the external facing opportunities.
I know that was supposed to be my last question, but I have one more, and then I swear we're going to wrap up here because I do have another meeting, but, I broke my own rule and I have a hard stop. Metrics, right? When you're talking about if you want to test this thing and figure out if this is right for you and if this is right for your organization, obviously these things take time to build and you're not going to see revenue like tomorrow. If somebody figures that out, they're going to make a ton of money, but that's not how marketing works.
How.
We all know that.
Tell me how.
Yes. What is that secret? So what are some of those initial metrics that you sort of look at to say, we're on to something?
So I look at a couple things. One is engagement. If I'm doing things like social, if I'm doing things like webinars where there's a digital thing, I'm looking at how many people attended the webinar, how many people stayed through the entire thing, how many questions did we get, you know, and I kind of use those as how engaged the audience is. If I'm posting on social or I'm helping others post on social, right? How many impressions? How many comments and likes and different things? And again, those are, I'll call them fluffy metrics to some degree. You know, some people think of them as vanity. I don't think of it as vanity. I think of them as a barometer. What I want to see is it going up, right? I want to see improvement in that area. I don't care if it's 5 likes, because if you have 5 likes from 5 VPs, that is way better than, you know, 500 likes from just a random audience. And so the volume doesn't matter. It's kind of the growth. study after study, we know, especially on LinkedIn, 2.5 to 5x improvement in engagement from personal profiles as opposed to company profiles. So getting people out, sharing your message on their personal profiles is going to have a significant impact. So do that. And then I look for anecdotal things as well. Like, it's okay to have qualitative things. Like, I specifically talked to this person at this conference. They walked up to me. I'm going to watch their opportunity. And then we have a closed one. And we know where we sourced them from because they hadn't come to us until that trade show. We had this conversation that turned into closed revenue. And what I'm looking for is are there more of those today than there were yesterday? Right. And just kind of that idea of continual improvement.
I think that's so important, especially for you recovering perfectionists out there, myself included. Progress over perfection, right? 5 likes is a really good start on LinkedIn. I know it doesn't seem that way, but believe me, as somebody who's just regressed from not posting every day, 5 likes is a really good start. And it's all about that momentum and that growth. And you're never going to have it if you don't ever start.
90% of people who are active on LinkedIn never like or comment at all, but they read your content. And I was at our customer advisory board meeting this last fall, and I was talking to people who I know are connected to me, and they're like, "Oh, I see your stuff all the time." Like, you never like or comment. They're like, "Oh yeah, but I see it all the time." I'm like, "Okay." But you have to remember that there's so many people lurking below, you know, the ocean a little bit that you never ever see, but are reading your content constantly. When I get on a meeting and my CEO says to me, "I see every time I open up social, I see you there." I'm like, "I'm doing something right," because there's others out there like that.
That's such a good point. I think we forget that because we are creatures of vanity, habit, all of the above. We like want the immediate feedback and give us the thumbs up and tell us we're doing okay. And so
we want the dopamine from getting a like. Yeah, absolutely.
It's so hard. It's so hard. And I love that you're doubling down on the fact that, like, to not get stuck there. It's really hard to get over, but such a good point and reminder. Zach, this has been fantastic. I could seriously keep going because I think this is an unused platform. And there's a couple of folks out there doing it really, really well, yourself included. And I'm so grateful for this conversation. Real quick before we close out, because you're more than a marketer, Zach, more than a marketer. Tell me one about a new hobby you've picked up in the last few years, given the change of the world.
Yeah. So, I am writing a book on storytelling, but that's very business related. So it's been a challenge. It's been kind of fun to do, but the fun thing is, so I spent many years doing improv. So I mentioned my theater background. I spent many years doing improv. I started writing some stand-up during the pandemic, just for the sake of like doing it. And, you know, I have no visions of grandeur of like going out and having a, you know, a comedy special, but doing some stand-up. And ultimately my goal is to write a screenplay. I think everybody's goal is to write a screenplay or a novel at some point in time, probably, but that's where I'm kind of working towards. So just to say I did it, just to, you know, to pitch it. And who knows, maybe Netflix is listening. They'll pick up something I haven't written yet, but I doubt it.
I kind of want to hear some of your jokes, but maybe we'll save those until next time. Zach, this has been glorious. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
That was my conversation with Zach Wendt. Thank you for hanging on for my very long intro. I appreciate y'all as I give you some updates on where we're going here with Tea Time in the coming weeks. If you enjoyed my conversation with Zach, please be sure to reach out to him. You can find him on LinkedIn as well as Treasure Data. I left the links in the show notes. Winding down. I'm so grateful. Thank you all so much. Let's keep the joy of tea time going wherever you listen. And maybe you would prefer video and you can come hang out with us on LinkedIn or YouTube. But I look forward to staying in touch. If you found this episode helpful, please like, subscribe, and share, as Audio is not going anywhere. We're just expanding to new horizons. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. This episode is brought to you by MKG Marketing, the digital marketing agency that scales brands through meaningful relationships, fueling their ability to push their mission forward. It's hosted by me, Carrie Gard, CEO and co-founder of MKG Marketing. Music mix and mastering done by Austin Ellis. And if you'd like to be a guest, please visit mkgmarketing.com to apply.